You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Monday, 29 July. We've got McDonald's results due later today. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Mateta Tulari from RMB. The US tech sell-off, just the sell-off generally, is this run over? There's a lot still happening out there. Should one be fearful, or should one just say, you know what, this is what markets do? Mark Ngube from Anchor, talking the investment case for uranium and his preferred stock. And then Wandile Shilobo from Agriculture Business Chamber of South Africa. Global food prices, all indications that they've peaked, they've been coming down, and we'll have a look ahead for the rest of the year. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb, making the case for simply following the trend. Sticking with your winners, even the overvalued ones, appears to be the best strategy. And Business Day, Sanlam Alliance launches in Ghana after merger approval. Partnership creates financial services JV worth more than 35 billion rand. Morning markets, US was green on Friday, S&P up 1.1%, NASDAQ up 1%. Over in the East, it's green. Sydney, 0.25% higher, Tokyo, 2.7% up, Hong Kong, 1.7%, and Tencent, 1.5% higher. Commodities are mixed. Gold, 2,442. Brent is red, 81.25. Platinum, 951, and palladium red at 896. Rand, 18.28. Bitcoin, 69,400. And top 40, looking for a green open, about 175 points or a quarter of a percent higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Mateta Tulari, head of FX execution at RMB. Mateta, always appreciate the early morning. As I mentioned in the intro there, I mean, markets are, I suppose, in some sense, doing what they do, which is at times they go down. Particularly if we look at US markets, there's lots of valuation built into those tech stocks. There is still an election some 3 months away. Do you look out at markets with a slight sense of foreboding, or is this just a case of, you know, markets never go in a straight line?
Good morning, Simon. I suppose, yeah, look, it's the start of another week. And I mean, if you think about it, the NASDAQ last week closing the week down 2.7%, marking the third week in a row of declines. I mean, obviously, like you said, the tech sector has been suffering its largest single day percentage drop since October 22. And I mean, obviously, the sell-off really points to a wider concern, as you likely say, I mean, around the high valuations of a handful of tech giants and how vulnerable the wider US market is to their fate. I mean, the culprit, if you think about it, you know, to this market is obviously what everyone is thinking about, the Fed cutting interest rates. You've seen Tesla's lackluster earnings. There's also fears about Google's spending and their AI spending ramp. It feels like the AI trade that we've been talking about is hitting a bit of a wall. And added to that is the rotation out of the big tech sector stocks. And I think this is the start of potentially a valuation correction. I mean, if you think about the likes of NVIDIA, I mean, which is, you know, the biggest benefactors of the AI boom, that proved to be the biggest drag on the S&P last week, with its stock, you know, struggling to recover amid fears that the escalating trade tension between the U.S. with China and Taiwan, where most of the world's chip microchips are made. Now, if you think about it, we've already got about 3.5 months left before the U.S. presidential race, and also projections for inflation and interest rates in the country and the U.S. will have heavily on stocks. I mean, already Silicon Valley is under pressure to show returns, especially from the multi-billion dollar investment that has went into AI spending. I mean, if you think about it, the significant shift has already pushed, you know, the smaller chips to be also increasing. I mean, the Russell 2000 last week, recording weekly gains for a third week in a row, which shows you that there is this massive rotation out of tech stocks into the smaller caps. And obviously, this is the best stretch for the Russell 2000 in about since 2022. But if you think about it, there's a threat of a lot of pressure ahead. There's risk of slow profit growth, coupled with the fact that obviously at this point in time, everybody's going to be watching what's going on into the US presidential election. But make no mistake, I mean, US investors at this point in time, the interesting fact last week was that quite a lot of money has been pumped into equity funds in the 7 days in the past week. I mean, already this is shrugging off, you know, this tech sell-off to focus on the robust corporate earnings and also the possibility of a Fed rate cut. And I mean, it's quite interesting that if you think about the 201 companies in the S&P 500 that reported earnings last week, 79% of them did beat the consensus on the net income estimate. So it tells you that there is a story to this, but obviously at this point in time, the big focus obviously will be the tech sector and obviously what's happening there.
Yeah, I take your point in that. And it was Sundar Pichai last week, Alphabet, saying they're not sure how AI makes money, but they have to spend the R&D so they don't get left behind. And that perhaps is the biggest story. Metete Tulari, head of FX execution, RMB, appreciate the early morning time.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in StanLib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. StanLib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm turning with Michael Nkubi. He's portfolio analyst at Anchor. Michael, appreciate the time today. Nuclear power, I mean, it's been around for, I don't know, 50 years or perhaps more as an energy source, but it really is getting a significant resurgence in the energy transition that is so much spoken about these days.
Hi, Simon. Good day to your listeners. I think essentially if you sit back and analyze the dynamics, like if you look at nuclear power, obviously a byproduct of uranium, nuclear energy provides low emission power generation that is critical to decarbonization. Globally, demand for uranium is increasing due to aggressive nuclear power plant build programs, reactor life extensions and small modular reactor developments. Western countries have been dependent on Russian uranium conversion and enrichment historically, but are now shifting away toward an ex-Russian supply. There is growing uranium supply deficit as different mines enter their end of life, secondary supply declines, and excess inventories have been drawn down.
And we are seeing, I mean, by reports, I mean, even the small modular are quite new in the scene, but the more traditional sort of large scale nuclear power plant, and there's like about 170 currently sort of, you know, under construction or in the pipeline. I mean, that is a giant number and is going to need significant supply of uranium into the future.
Yes, Simon, I fully much agree. You know, different reports will give you different figures, but on average, with around 436 nuclear reactors running worldwide, and about 170, as you have mentioned, more planned, uranium demand is still rising. The US, China, and France together use about 58% of the world's uranium. Wow. Right now, there's still a supply shortage. And by 2040, we might see a gap of around 680,000 metric tons. Reactivating old mines is crucial for short-term supply because new mines can take 10 to 15 years to start producing uranium. Plus, if you factor in the rise of AI and data centers needing more energy, we'll definitely need new mines to meet demand on top of what's currently there.
That's a great point. I mentioned up front around the energy transition. Nuclear power in of itself, and if we look at the life cycle, it's a clean energy. It's similar to wind, and in fact, in many cases, lower than solar power. This is a green baseload energy.
Yeah, very much I agree. But you know, eventually, if you look at the other means of producing energy, especially if you factor in the decarbonization world that we're moving towards, in terms of like CO2 emissions, nuclear power produces very small amount compared to your coal, similar to your wind and your geothermal eventually.
Safety, I mean, there's often concerns around it, but truthfully, there's only been two large-scale power plant problems. That was Chernobyl and Fukushima. Although there is a fair bit of concern around nuclear power, it is an incredibly safe form of power. And truthfully, I'd rather live next to a nuclear power plant than a coal-fired power plant.
Yeah, I mean, those were two catastrophic events that happened in Japan and Ukraine. But howsoever, it's like the public sentiment towards nuclear energy, given those. But if you look at the data, nuclear energy relative to your hydro, relative to your natural gas, oil, coal, it has the lowest mortality rate.
Yeah, absolutely. You've mentioned we are coming into a crunch. New mines take a significant period of time to get going. Who is your pick at anchor in the uranium sector? What would be your stock pick in that regard?
Yeah, that's a very great question. Bottom line, it depends how you want to invest in your uranium, whether in mining companies, engineering companies, or utility companies, or rather just an ETF. Uranium Energy Corp, UEC, moved from exploration to production in 2023 and is now the fastest growing uranium company in North America. They have projects in the US, Canada, and Paraguay. Their share price has gone up by 80% in the past year, showing strong investor confidence. UEC is well positioned to benefit from rising uranium prices, making it a promising investment. However, like any other investment, uranium comes with its own set of risks, such as regulatory changes and public opinion on nuclear energy, to name a few. So understanding the market and managing risks is crucial for successful investing in uranium. This sector is exciting and worth considering for a diversified investment portfolio.
Well, if you do, that's Mark Ngobe, his portfolio analyst anchor. Appreciate the time today.
We've chatted uranium before on this show. I suppose the question is, are you invested into the nuclear as a concept? And you could do it, as you said, as Michael said there, via a uranium ETF. You can do it individual stocks. But is it a space you're looking into? Is it a space that you perhaps already have some investments? Have your say, have your vote, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. When you invest in Stanlib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the unpredictable ups and downs caused by day-to-day market fluctuations. Because our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Wandile Shilobo, Chief Economist, Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Wandile, appreciate the time today. If we look back first, global food prices pretty much peaked just after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and they've been sort of edging lower since then.
Absolutely. They've been edging lower for some time, to an extent that today we are about 25% lower compared to the peak in March 2022. And of course, this is a benefit of a number of things, because at the time when Russia-Ukraine war started, we were already in an environment that was challenging, where drought in South America had already started pushing price up. China was buying a lot of grain, supply chain difficulties resulting from COVID, and that Russia-Ukraine war only just exacerbated that. But I think since then, we have started to see good moderation on prices to an extent now. On average, global grain and oilseeds prices, they're down 25% from March 2022.
That is absolutely chunky. If we look forward, I mean, the season ahead, still early days, but in a note, you were talking around soybean, which is a hugely important global crop, both for human, but also for animal feed at the same time, and looking good for that. And that speaks a lot to, I mean, pricing, but just generally food security.
Absolutely. I do want to underscore one point to say, now that the price is continuous moderation from the peak that we saw in March was, of course, a result of a number of things. One being the fact that there was a grain deal, that was Black Sea grain deal, that was put in place months after to allow the movement of grain out of Ukraine, out of Russia to a certain extent. But also the fact that global grains production did recover, and that added to this moderation on prices that we have seen for some time, to an extent that when we look forward from where we're sitting today, the 2024-25 production season is also as optimistic. Just for example, a few weeks ago, the International Grains Council, and indeed even the United States Department of Agriculture, they released their forecast. And both of these organizations, they are fairly optimistic about the upcoming season. Putting all of the grains and the oilseeds together, they see the production at about 2.3 billion tons of grains and oilseeds. This is up mildly from the previous season. And of course, then there are healthy stocks. And I think this adds to this softening of prices that we have been seeing. But I must warn though, Simon, that this is still early on because we are now only seeing plantings happening in the Northern Hemisphere. And certainly in the Southern Hemisphere, the planting will only start from October. So if weather conditions remain favorable, then we may see really an excellent crop, but there's still a couple of months to go before we know for certain.
I take your point on that. What about the big grains, the wheat and the maize? Important globally, important particularly maize for us. Any sense of how that is looking, notwithstanding, as you say, it is early days?
Absolutely. I would even start with rice in the context of South Africa, because you'll know that we bring in as a country about 1 million tons of rice each year. We produce none of that domestically because we are a semi-arid country. And when you look at global rice production for 2024-25 season, the International Grains Council places that harvest at about 528 million tons. This is up 1% year on year. And they see a healthy improvement also in stocks. The crop is expected to see a notable recovery in India, in Vietnam, Thailand, the US, China, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and the Philippines are just some of the regions that the crop is expected to recover in. We also see an encouraging recovery in the soybean production. The figures that are out is that we may have 415 million tons of soybean production in 2024-25 season. This is up 6% year on year. And of course, the Americans as well as South Americans and India are the ones that are behind that improvement in the crop. And this is where, Simon, that I'm cautious about, because 50% of global soybean production happens in South America. And South America's season starts at the same time as South Africa, but these numbers are good. And quickly, though, on wheat, where we are also bringing in about 1.5 million tons of wheat, wheat production is estimated at around about 793 million tons, which in my view, I think this is still a very healthy crop, well above the long-term average. On global maize production is also well above average at about 1.2 billion tons. So this is really an optimistic season that we're looking at.
Yeah, good news all around. What about a possible La Nina effect in the 24-25 summer season, which, if I remember my geography, means rain for us, but perhaps dry for other parts of the world?
That's exactly my major worry, because it does seem to us in all major indications that we are looking at that from around about October, the La Nina possibilities may strengthen to over 50%, which means then that we may get those good rainfall and have a good season in South Africa. Mm-hmm. But if you think about particularly South Americans, that's where I'm worried at. And also that's where half of the global soybeans comes from, and over 12% of global maize production happens in that region. So those are some of the aspects that one is thinking about. Be that as it may, even if we do go to La Nina, as I hope we do, I think for the grains that we import as South Africa, which is your wheat and also rice, those anticipate much of the challenges. Even if we are in that space, I do think that we'll still see a comfortable environment and comfortable supplies in the world market, which will be good for South African grain and wheat users, but also consumers ultimately.
Yeah, but ultimately the consumers. Did I hear you right? Half of soybean out of South America.
Absolutely. You have the likes of Brazil, you have the likes of Argentina and Paraguay, the major players down there in South America.
That's a staggering number. Leave it there, Wandile Shalobo, Chief Economist, Agricultural Business Chamber of South Africa. Always appreciate the time. That's it for today. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Gold.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.